Welcome, listeners, to the NK News Podcast, recorded here in Seoul on June 14, 2018. I'm your host, Jacko Zwetsloot, and joining me here in the studio today from NK News are writer cum editor extraordinaire Oliver Hotham.
Good evening.
And NK News contributor Hamish McDonald.
G'day.
Today we'll be doing a quick roundup of the Trump-Kim summit. Once again, NK News is offering a free year subscription to one reviewer who reviews our podcast not only at iTunes but also at other platforms. Also, you can save $50 off your NK News subscription by using the code PODCAST at the checkout. Don't forget, if you enjoy the podcast, please share with others so that our listenership will continue to grow. All right, gentlemen, question number one. What was the biggest surprise of the summit?
For me, I suppose it would probably be the military drills announcement. That was quite a surprise.
Do you think it was as big a surprise for you as it was for, let's say, President Moon Jae-in?
That was an interesting... as soon as I heard Trump say that, actually, my immediate thought was, are the South Koreans aware of this? Partially because I think if the South Koreans were aware of it, it would have been leaked. And we would have gotten a little Yonhap alert probably an hour or so before Trump actually said it.
Well, it wasn't, because it wasn't mentioned in the statement, which was leaked before the press conference. So was he just making it up? Was he on the fly?
I'm assuming that perhaps it was something that they had agreed to, but they didn't want to put on paper to allow the Americans some degree of flexibility. We've already seen on the ambiguity. So Trump has said on Tuesday that they were going to cancel the war games. They're very expensive, et cetera, et cetera. But since then, there's been a bit of dialing back on that, mainly to see how the South Koreans react. The South Koreans seem to have kind of accepted it now. And so Trump said it was going to be instant, right? But Mike Pompeo today said, it's not going to be instant. It's kind of contingent on North Korea taking steps towards denuclearize, which, you know, isn't what Trump said. It's all very confusing.
And obviously the South Koreans issued a killer statement when they were saying, we're trying to figure out what he means, which is...
As if there's ambiguity to, I'm ending the war games, they're too expensive.
Yeah.
Now, Hamish, was that also the biggest surprise for you personally in the summit or anything else?
That was a big surprise. I think perhaps to go a different angle, I think the weakness of the joint declaration was something that surprised me. Just because, you know, it contrasted so heavily with the messaging from the United States beforehand. You know, Pompeo and others saying, we won't accept anything other than CVID. And then to see a document that Trump called comprehensive while it's anything but, I think that was something that was quite surprising.
But I'd love to know what Bolton thought of all that.
Yeah, I'd love to know what Bolton thought when he was shaking Kim Jong-un's hand as well.
Kim Jong-un got a glimpse inside the presidential limo at the big red button.
Saw the beast.
Inside the beast.
I think for me, the biggest surprise, just aesthetically speaking, is how well the Stars and Stripes sits next to the North Korean flag of the Republic. I mean, you know, the colors do seem to match up nicely, don't they?
Well, you know, Trump said the nuclear threat from North Korea is over, so you might see those flags side by side a little more in the future.
Well, that's right. What was the biggest disappointment for you? Hamish, do you want to start off first?
I think the surprise I mentioned matches up with the disappointment quite nicely. I think the expectations were to get something that built upon previous declarations and previous agreements. But in fact, the declaration that they signed is actually weaker than some of the things agreed to in the past.
It's weaker than the Panmunjom declaration,
which from
is
April
between
27th.
Two countries who have almost no power to actually resolve this issue between themselves. It's all about North Korea and the US, right? And they had all of these things that they agreed to, concrete steps that would make things better. And this agreement is just, it's so weak. I mean, we've got it here. The 3 points are, they're going to improve relations in accordance with the desire of the peoples. What that means, we have no idea. Does that mean embassies? Does that mean that they'll just continue talking?
Right.
Then build joint efforts to build lasting peace. Then reaffirming the commitment to denuclearization. And then the recovering of POW and MIA remains, which is... I mean, symbolically significant, but it isn't really something that is worth, you know, a huge point on what is supposed to be a historic agreement.
I mean, from a humanitarian perspective, it's great that North Korea and the US could agree on that.
Yeah.
But that's not why they were sitting down at the table. You know, this was about negotiations over denuclearization, and the statement itself that the DPRK commits to work towards complete denuclearization is one that is vague and relatively alarming.
But what about those who say, okay, this is just the beginning, there are going to be constant meetings? Take, for example, the fourth point there, the one about finding the remains of deceased American servicemen from the Korean War. That will take constant and regular follow-ups and meetings, right? And
well, if that was what how this whole agreement had been marketed in the first place, then I think that would have been okay. You know, if the Americans had been very, oh, this is just going to be the first thing and blah, 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 which Trump actually did hint a little bit the week before the agreement. Mm-hmm. But the way this was hyped, especially by Pompeo in that press conference he gave on Monday, where he really made it sound like this was going to be some enormous deal that was going to solve the problem. And then this kind of weak tea thing. And, you know, the POW MIA remains will probably involve a lot of North Korea-US engagement, but it's engagement on something where North Korea doesn't really have to give anything up for that to happen. It makes them look good and they don't lose anything. Whereas there's nothing about human rights. There's nothing about how sanctions are going to work. It's just very weak.
I think, you know, there needs to be a starting point and there needs to be confidence building between the two countries. And yes, this is a starting point, but it's relatively toothless. It's weaker than previous declarations and agreements and statements. So that in itself, it was a bit of an anticlimax. I mean, in terms of follow-ups, Pompeo said, yeah, I'll be leading them, but we actually don't know when we're going to meet them next. We haven't discussed it. So North Korea came in, they've signed this document and they've left, and there's no concrete follow-up as yet. So
there were a lot of preparatory meetings in Pyongyang, in Panmunjom, in Singapore, in New York, in Washington. What happened? Did the two men just go by instinct? Was the preparation all for nothing, given the vagueness of the statement?
Well, all of this seems to be kind of instinctual. So we're supposed to essentially believe that Trump has some great understanding of Kim Jong-un now and that he trusts him. And that was the whole point of that press conference yesterday, that Trump kind of just said, well, you're just going to have to believe me that Kim Jong-un wants to do this stuff, which isn't really substantial at all. And Trump has a lot of political reasons for saying, oh, believe me, it's going to work out, you know, but we honestly don't really know.
We've already talked about the statement. Let's just focus for a bit on the press conference. It was over an hour. How long was it exactly? Was it 90 minutes? It was quite a long one.
Yeah, it was 90 minutes.
I think it would have been a surprise to Trump's press team that it went on for as long as it did. It was quite unfiltered. It was pure Trump in every sense of the word, wasn't it?
It was pure Trumpism, and that was Trump on, as he claimed, that he hadn't slept for 25 hours as well.
Right.
So it was really, which explains the weirdness of it. I mean, there was like, he was talking about how much he knows about airplanes. He was raising all these complex ontological questions like, if you stand up, do you even know that you're going to be able to sit down?
Wow, really, I'd forgotten odd. That one.
Yeah, and then he said that people in gulags were the real winners.
Okay, what do you make of what he said about Otto Warmbier? The press conference, that was an odd thing to say,
yeah,
wasn't it?
Yeah, I think, you know, it was largely the questions about Otto Warmbier were largely to make clear the comparison between Trump prior to the summit and Trump now, calling Kim Jong-un a very talented man when he was basically calling him a despot, saying North Korea had tortured Otto beyond belief. You know, he had to come up with an answer. I don't believe that Otto's death led to the two sides meeting. I don't think it had anything to do with it. You know, we saw that his family's response and you know, they said, you know, we thank Donald Trump for his comments about our son and, you know, they're very proud of their boy.
Yeah, and they hope something positive will come out of the summit. So
absolutely,
they're basically backing Trump up, aren't they?
All that sort of stuff was very depressing and Trump-esque, I found, especially after this squib agreement we all had. We thought we might get some more things, but it was very, very surreal and just strange to have Kim Jong-un talking through Donald Trump as well. I was under the impression that there might be some kind of joint statement as well, so that we had this declaration. Then after the Panmunjom agreement, the two leaders came out and made speeches themselves, but Kim Jong-un just left, which made it sound very much like the optics of that Trump did this rambling press conference and then Kim Jong-un just goes back to his hotel. It really made it feel like this is not that substantial.
Isn't that just a function of Kim Jong-un not wanting to subject himself to media questioning?
Yeah, I'm sure that's certainly an element of it. I mean, when they first met and they sat down for pictures prior to their one-on-one meeting, you know, they said a couple of statements, but that's probably the limit to which Kim Jong-un wanted to be exposed to the press in that manner.
Just briefly, what do you think the summit, the statement, and post-summit, what does it mean for the people of North Korea? What do you
Well, you know, it's being presented as their leader is a man who can get things done. He's the first North Korean leader to meet a sitting U.S. president, which is significant in lending him credibility. You know, you could see potentially China, we are seeing indications that China are relaxing sanctions, so possibly new business opportunities. But beyond that, I mean, human rights are likely going to remain the same, and the situation is likely going to remain within the status quo. I mean, there's so much work to be done. Look, if this is a platform to launch a peace initiative and there's credible relations between the two, then that's great. But all the work still lies ahead of us. There was very little achieved to advance that end.
I mean, obviously, if to be like more optimistic about it, if it does all work out and we get these kind of economic sort of incentives for North Korea, then it's obviously good for the North Korean people because they will benefit from an open market economy and foreign investment and all that types of things. But again, we all just have to wait and see. That's the thing. The diplomacy is going to be so long and drawn out at this point. As Trump himself said, it might not work out 6 months down the line.
What do you think this summit means for the United States?
It makes Trump look good, I suppose. Well, not really, though, because, I mean, I think Trump saw it as a victory for himself, obviously, but the coverage in the US press was overwhelmingly negative and sometimes foolishly so. Insofar as, say, someone like Rachel Maddow said, like a liberal anchor, she said, you know, Donald Trump has broken the American presidential tradition of not meeting with dictators, which, I mean, a cursory glance at American modern history knows that American presidents have met dictators, all sorts of dictators.
Well, that's right. When South Korea had a dictator, John Dewan,
Reagan.
I think, wasn't he Ronald Reagan's first foreign guest?
He was.
After he came into the White House. So, yeah, that's clearly not true.
Carter met with all sorts of South American dictators. I mean,
I think the difference is the severity of what Kim Jong-un does and what he is in charge of. And that's a relevant point, I think. There's a reason why no sitting US president had met with a North Korean leader before, and that's an element of it.
Well, okay, then my counterexample would be that Richard Nixon met with Chairman Mao, who may have up to 52 million deaths on his hands. Am I overstating it there? I don't know. But anyway,
I think that's fair. I mean, FDR met with Stalin.
Right, well, okay, there we go.
At Yalta. I mean, obviously, different circumstances. Yeah. Fighting maybe a worse evil. I think it's also the way that Trump behaves. You know, if this was any other president, it would be slightly different, right? It's the way that Trump behaves. There's no middle ground for Trump. He can't act just calm and diplomatic. He has to go, either this man is the most evil guy in the world, or he's great, he's smart, we love him, he's very talented. There's no, he can't just...
Do you think the media reactions are also partly a function of how badly the G7 summit went immediately before the meeting with Kim Jong-un?
I think there was a question. Why are you embracing your enemies and alienating your friends?
various media outlets in the last few days that, on the one hand, President Trump is... having various disputes with the Prime Minister of Canada, the Chancellor of Germany and other European leaders. And then here we go, you know, having a great meeting with Kim Jong-un. It does seem a little bit incongruous.
I think he was keen for a victory, keen to achieve something. So I think he was also overly optimistic in the wake of the G7 conference as well to kind of herald this as a success.
Now, what about for South Korea? What does the summit, the statement mean for South Korea, apart from the confusion over military drills?
Well, apart from the confusion over military drills, it seems to have done quite well because we woke up this morning to the news that the Minjudang had just completely swept the country and won almost every province. As linked as that maybe wasn't to the summit, I think it certainly helps Moon in his agenda. I don't think it hurts him necessarily. I think the military drills thing doesn't look great for the alliance.
I should explain a bit of background for our listeners there. So yesterday was a nationwide local or regional election day here in South Korea. And the party that President Moon Jae-in is involved with is the party that swept almost every local electorate, isn't it?
There was, I think, Daegu was the only one that went red. And there was another one as well. I think Busan. No, Busan went Minjudang as well. Yeah, it was complete across the board.
It was a rout for the conservatives in Korea. Yeah, although the conservatives, to be fair, they were split between various parties. Right,
both of whom have now resigned as well. both Hong Jun-pyo and what's his name, the other one?
Yoo Suk-min?
Yeah, he resigned as well.
Has he really? Goodness me. Wow. Okay, so that's, yeah. So for South Korea, I guess it's a political victory for Moon Jae-in's own party.
It's also a victory for his platform with engaging North Korea as well. This makes it a lot easier. He invested a lot of political capital in trying to get the two to meet. So, you know, you can just see those images of his smile when he watched Kim and Trump shake hands. It's quite telling.
Now, we know that earlier today, Mike Pompeo, U.S. Secretary of State, met with President Moon and with Foreign Minister Kang Kyung-hwa. Do we have any reports from that yet?
We do. The questions were mainly about the military drills issue.
And, not surprisingly.
Well, Pompeo's kind of become the guy who has to pass Trump's weirdness, right? So Pompeo had to explain all this. Oh, well, the drills thing is more complicated. Minister Kang didn't really want to talk about the military drills. Ultimately, it's not really her responsibility. It's the Ministry of Defense is...
Now, I was talking to somebody earlier today over coffee who suggested that Japan's line might be a wait-and-see one because even though it wants to have bilateral discussions about abductee issues, it knows that abductee issues will go lockstep with North Korea making demands for reparations for the colonial period, which would surely be contingent upon developments and forward movement in CVID or any kind of disarmament. So surely now would be premature for Shinzo Abe to be flying over to Pyongyang or vice versa for one-on-one meetings with Kim Jong-un.
I think partially they're saying that because they want to kind of have something unique to pitch to North Korea as well. Oh, we want talks on this issue, right? But I think Abe did also say, like, I'm not thinking this is going to happen anytime soon and we'll have to see what happens.
Now, what about China? We at NK News here today broke the story that there were movements up in Dandong suggesting there might be a VIP visit across the border from North Korea. Do we expect that Kim Jong-un will go make a third visit with Xi Jinping soon?
You know, what's telling is China's sort of celebration at the summit. It heralded the fact that these two countries met, but it also said it was essentially the realization of their dual-track approach, a freeze-for-freeze, meaning, you know, North Korea freezes ballistic missile launches and nuclear tests, and the U.S. in return freezes the joint military exercises.
Right.
They've also said that the United Nations Security Council should look at relaxing sanctions, which, you know, we've seen an increase of North Korean ships visiting ports in China, so they already appear to be relaxing those, but this is their playbook now.
So this is an unmitigated win for China then, isn't it?
It appears so. You know, in an interesting turn of events, it's hard to argue that the scenario they put forward hasn't happened.
Yeah, a scenario that they were pitching last year, we could have just agreed to it then and skipped all this nonsense. If that was what the ultimate agreement was going to be, then,
right,
you know, if that's it, yeah, no more missile tests, no more drills.
So basically when the, was it the North Korean ambassador to India who first sort of publicly put that forward from North Korea, the freeze for freeze thing? There was somebody, a North Korean diplomat in India who was being interviewed on Indian television, who I think was the first one to actually put that idea out there. And then since then it's been grabbed and run with. So and that was over a year ago. Now, what about this summit and its outcomes compared to the Iran situation?
Well, that's another contrast, which is remarkable. You know, Trump said that the JCPOA was incredibly flawed. Part of that was, he said, about verification. And now we've got this document, which he is lauding as comprehensive, which he is celebrating as a victory, and stating that North Korea is no longer a nuclear threat. It's very hard to bridge those two things.
Is it a political thing? I mean, is it simply the Iran deal was worked out under Obama, so has to be bad?
I don't think Trump understands the Iran deal, really.
Because it's not his own.
Because it's not his own, because he thought Obama did a bad job, but it's very strange to have the US striking up a deal with North Korea that has almost none of the safeguards. I mean, the JCPOA was backed by the European Union, Russia, China. It was an extremely complex deal with all these different safeguards to make sure Iran couldn't restart its nuclear program. And then Trump's just gone, well, we'll make a nebulous deal with North Koreans.
Right, and there's barely a month between the two things happening, right? I mean, the JCPOA was, I don't remember the exact date, but it was sometime in early May that it was rescinded. And then here we are, middle of June, and we've got this new deal with North Korea. So they're so close together, it's hard not to make that comparison, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely. And people thought the decision with Iran was in part to signal to North Korea that the US was not going to accept anything short of you know, its top demands, right? So,
do we think North Korea will ever denuclearize?
No. I personally don't see the North Koreans willingly and fully abandoning their capabilities. It's what has got them this summit. It's what has kept them, to a degree, protected, certainly in their eyes, from an intervention or a military strike of some sort. Obviously, there's other factors that do prevent that. But it's, you know, as they put it, their treasured sword of justice. I don't think they're going to relinquish that at all.
At some point, something will have to change because North Korea can't continue under the way the sanctions are. It just doesn't seem a feasible long term. The way that the social and economic changes that are taking place in North Korea, I don't think having these restrictions on the country's economy and North Korea's doing business abroad, that doesn't, to me, seem like a sustainable model. So the status quo can't really stay in position. So either we need to have some kind of deal where North Korea has a phased approach and sanctions are slowly relieved, or it's the doomsday scenario and the John Bolton boom, boom.
Well, it also depends on what the world is able to stomach. Is that a reduction in nuclear weapons from their current arsenal? Is it the destruction of key facilities? Is it other physical actions that they can take where the world is satisfied that they're no longer the big threat that they currently represent? But I don't think that they're going to be willing to give it all up. I just don't see that as a scenario.
Okay, so overall, who was the better strategic player, Trump or Kim? What do you think, Ollie?
Kim. Almost certainly. Yeah. I mean, Kim Jong-un came out of this looking great. He doesn't really have to commit to anything right now. He's albeit given a few concessions in the months leading up to this, but concessions that aren't extremely damaging to him. In fact, some of the concessions make him look quite good domestically. The decision to halt missile and nuclear tests, announcement that the country will now 100% focus on its economic development, which makes Kim Jong-un look very good domestically. The day before he left for Singapore, he went to this new fish restaurant in Pyongyang, and it all looked very fancy and glamorous, and that's kind of his future and how he sees himself. So I think Kim Jong-un came out of this quite well, really.
Yeah, I agree. I think he comes out of it quite well. The document that was signed is something that the North Koreans going into it obviously found perfectly acceptable. It's vague enough. It's not comprehensive, and they've gotten out of it. I think one thing that's really interesting about the summit was Kim's comments during that stroll through Singapore, saying he wants to learn from the Singapore economic development that they've seen. And it's yet another indication of that shift in the Byung-jin line policy towards economic development. You know, I'd be interested to see how that develops, and if the US is willing to alleviate some sanctions, then I think that economic development might expand rapidly.
Probably good news for our friends over at Chosun Exchange, isn't it?
Oh, well, we bumped into Jeffrey C. of Chosun Exchange.
Shout out to Jeffrey C.
Shout out to Jeffrey. The night that Kim Jong-un went for his nighttime stroll, we were on a taxi. We were actually going for dinner. It had been quite a long day. This was on Monday night, and bumped into Jeffrey, and then Kim Jong-un appeared. He was walking around, and they did a light show for him. He went up the, I don't know if he went for a swim in the infinity pool. That's in the Marina Bay Sands, isn't it? And then Kim Jong-un walked past us, and it was all very strange.
Now, near the end of the press conference, President Trump said, "Honestly, I think he's going to do these things. I may be wrong. I mean, I may stand before you in 6 months and say, hey, I was wrong. I don't know that I'll ever admit that, but I'll find some kind of excuse." Any comments?
Meta. That is very, very meta and very Trumpian.
It's very postmodern. The trope of the unreliable narrator.
But it's also, it speaks a lot to the document itself. He doesn't know. He thinks that he's going to denuclearize. The statement doesn't shed light on the situation for us. It doesn't shed light on the situation for Trump, it sounds like. So, yeah, but if he's given it a six-month timeline, we'll see. What developments take place within that bracket.
Like, Trump isn't a details guy, right? And we always knew that about him. Trump doesn't really care about the nitty-gritty stuff. He cares about the photo op. He cares about the deal. But he is surrounded by a lot of people who are details, very details-oriented people, and a lot of good diplomats and negotiators. So hopefully, I think him passing the buck to the State Department as these negotiations go forward will result in something more concrete. Just being in Singapore for this summit was very, it was very different to doing the inter-Korean summit, because that was obviously in South Korea. I think the parallels between North and South Korea, you know, such different countries, but Singapore, there are a few little parallels with North Korea, right? It's not a democratic country. It's a very strong authoritarian one-party government mixed with this crazy economic development. It's a model that he probably quite likes.
I think it's worth mentioning before Trump's post-summit press conference, he showed a video which he revealed that he had pitched to Kim Jong-un. It's a pitch about economic development. If you haven't seen it, I would recommend everybody listening to go watch it.
It's unbelievable.
It's pretty remarkable. And within it, actually, one of the interesting points is it still contains an implicit military threat. Basically, it's a pitch for economic development, a grab towards Kim's ego that he could be a great leader, or you could face
fire and fury.
Fire and fury.
I'll pop a link into this in the podcast.
Oh, please do, yeah. So lastly, and very, very briefly, best case scenario, 6 months from now, all these small details of the summit have been forgotten. Best case, where are we?
That North Korea has some more substantial roadmap towards how it's going to denuclearize, that they'll let in independent inspectors. That's really important to look around Punggye-ri. That would be good. There's some kind of framework for improving North Korea's economy, that Kim Jong-un is kind of continuing these economic reforms and that there's actually some results out of that, that North Koreans' lives appear to be getting better, more friendly relations, that inter-Korean stuff continues to get better and we don't have any risks of awful skirmishes or anything like that. And yeah, I think that would be a best case scenario.
For me, I hope that this is a starting point. You know, Jor-Jor is better than War-War. And hopefully in 6 months' time, there will have been plenty of meetings between the two. There will be credible steps on the ground, like Oliver said, to start allowing inspectors in, to have declarations about what North Korea actually has, and negotiations over how they can potentially relinquish that. Obviously, that'll have to come with concessions from the US, but I think at this point, everybody's realistic that this is going to be a phased approach.
Okay, and thank you once again to Oliver and Hamish for coming on the NK News podcast and reviewing all the news about the summit. Don't forget, to our listeners, you can listen to all of our shows as well as read full bios and show notes on our website, www.nknews.org. NK News is the leading repository of North Korean research, news, and analysis, and we hope to see you there. And you can send feedback, comments, questions, or guest suggestions to podcast@nknews.org. Our podcast was produced by Arias Dare and facilitated by Chad O'Carroll and Christina Lee. Lastly, a reminder that one random reviewer per week will win a free NK News membership, so please review us after listening and you might win. And you can save $50 off your NK News subscription by using the code PODCAST at the checkout. And listen again next time.